Great to see everyone here tonight. And looking forward to this study, this chapter. Samson has been, it's been a really fun study for me, looking at him in different ways than I have in days prior. So it's been good. Lord, you'll have to remind me you had the last question.
Levi
has the last question. Okay. So I titled this, this is Samson's Downfalls chapter. Because a lot of things come down in this chapter. As you'll see, the gates of the city come down. He falls in love. His hair falls. He falls asleep. He is taken down by the Philistines, of course. His morale falls. His spirit falls within him. And then, of course, he topples the building, and that falls down too. So it's a chapter of downfalls, if you ask me. But there's a lot of things that are raised up as well. We'll get into it. So the first question here for Cole. Why did Samson decide to visit a Philistine harlot? Was he still acting under the direction of the Spirit of the Lord, or was this truly a mistake that God rescues him from because of his God-given strength? And how far away did Samson carry the gates of the city?
So the first part, easy answer is he's a flawed man, like everybody except for Jesus. But I think it's important to note, earlier whenever he first fell in love with his wife, that it was of the Lord that he loved her. So that makes me think that God caused him to love her. And I mean, that must be the maddest love that could ever exist. So that makes me think of what agony he must have felt when that wife died. And then also to consider that he was betrayed by Judah. So he had a very deep love that was taken away from him, mm-hmm. and that leaves a void in his soul for companionship. And then the other companionship of friends is also taken away from him. So I think it's important to know for the why that he had that void in his heart, and that Satan used that as a way to tempt him and get him to fall. That's the second part. I would say, I mean, he's visiting a harlot, so I don't think, you know, that was under the Lord's direction.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a mistake. And I mean, it's important to note that when he lifts up the gates, does it not say the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him? So, I mean, obviously the Lord had to help him, but I think the Lord just still had use for him in, and he was allowing him to get past this mistake. Mm-hmm. And how far away did Samson carry the gates of the city? Too far for any mortal man to.
I have a map for that. So he's down here in Gaza, and he trucks these gates, or what is supposed. I read that there's actually two supposed spots for where Hebron is. So this is one, and we're talking about a good 40 miles, 50 maybe, maybe 60. I don't know. I'm not great at, you know, just looking at that. As the crow flies, I would say that's probably 40, 45 miles. But if he went through Lake, I don't know. Anyway, he, as Cole said, aptly put, farther than any man, ordinary man would be able to. Other thoughts here on question number one. And why Samson's with a harlot?
Follow on. Something I forgot to mention is it specifically mentions Philistine harlot in the question. Mm. So I was wondering if he had an intent by not just saying harlot. But what I would say is, his wife was a Philistine, so maybe that was part of why he felt her. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it would have been quite a distance to travel to gather instead of just going whatever harlot was around his own house.
Yeah. I didn't have any real specific, like, reason to put that in there, other than the fact that she's in Gaza. You assume that she's a Philistine harlot, but although, and this is, I forget which commentary brought this up, and I don't know if it's true, but I think it's worth thinking about, maybe just a little bit differently, but having gone through Joshua's account of the Battle of Jericho, you have the spies going into the house of Rahab the harlot. Now, did they go there for her services, or did they go there for lodging? I think they went there for lodging. And I think me and Dennis were even talking about the fact that it's possible that at that time she had already given up her days of harlotry. And in that time period, of course, there weren't hotels where you could stop. There weren't places where you could go and get lodging just on demand. And sometimes the harlots' houses were one of those places that people would frequent. So I know it does say that he went into her there in verse 1. But the Targum has it that it translated as innkeeper. So we could also ask the question, what's Samson doing in Gaza? You know, is he just walking around? He was just out on a stroll at midnight, and he happens to find himself, oh no, I'm in Gaza. Oh look, there's a pretty woman. I'll just go over there, I guess. Or was he there for a reason? Was he there for maybe a more strategic reason, being the judge of Israel? I don't know if that holds any merit. But maybe just a little bit different way to think about it, because we do have an example of Rahab the harlot being upheld, obviously, for her faith and what she did for Israel. And again, how did Samson find out about these men lying in wait? Could it have been from her? I don't know. These are all speculations reading between the lines, but I do bring it out for y'all's consideration. Mark, yeah.
Yeah, interesting thoughts there. And, you know, if you believe Samson's a type of the Lord, then Jesus also frequented publicans and in the company of publicans and harlots, and was criticized for that by the Jews. Logan brought up recently, we were discussing that they said he was a wine bibber and a drunkard. And those things were not true, obviously. They made up false reports about Jesus. And so is it possible that, he is just lodging in this place? That's an interesting thought. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it is an interesting thought. The exact words that he went into her are the exact Hebrew words that are used to describe when Barak went into the tent of Jael to see Sisera. It's exactly, I just found a commentator that pointed out what you just said and said that those same Hebrew words are used of Barak went into her, and then the translation adds the word tent, mm-hmm. Which is not in the Hebrew. And obviously, the commentator said, obviously, Barak wasn't there for illicit reasons.
Right.
He was coming in to see dead Sisera.
Right.
So it's just an interesting point. We discussed it in our little study, and we still favor an illicit reason, but it's not absolutely ironclad.
Yeah, that's not a hill I would die on, but it's one interesting to think about, but also with the account that follows it, it's also not out of the realm that this was truly and genuinely a mistake. So, I don't know. Why ask Samson one day, I guess. Other comments? Okay. So, as opposed to some of the other judges, he's down in the southern part. We've spent an awful lot of time in Ephraim and north and on the other side of the Jordan. He's down here in Gaza. He will be buried right around here between Zorah and Eshtaol. And of course he went down to Ashkelon when he got married the first time. So there's that matter for our consideration. So question number 2. There we go. Bill, what separates this account from the account of Samson's first wife?
Why might the Bible tell us Delilah's name, and why does Samson lie about the source of his strength, which he does seemingly for the fun of it?
Well, that first question, what separates this account from the account of Samson's first wife? That first, it was odd to me, and I'm not sure what you were looking for, but what occurred to me was that first woman deceived him one time, sold him out, sort of, one time, and he took vengeance. I mean, he was done with her, although I guess he returned with the goat. Again, the first wife deceived Samson, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson, chapter 14, verse 19. Delilah was found out three times trying to get Samson tricked, and yet he yielded to her, verse 17 of this chapter. Why might the Bible tell us Delilah's name? I thought that was a good question, and also, maybe trying to call extra attention to this woman, Delilah, and the power of a deceptive woman. That's a real thing. Delilah means flirtatious or a devotee, which the devotee was a woman of the temple, the harlot of the temple. Mm-hmm. Why does Samson lie about the source of his strength, which he does seemingly for the fun of it? I think it really did seem like a game to Samson. He was willing to play with fire. He got wore down by Delilah. He told her his heart, and then he got burned for it. So I think he probably learned a valuable lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. That's, not great. Other comments? Follow up? Yeah, Mark.
Something, and everybody maybe can state their opinion on this, but I've always thought previously that when the first three times when he lied to her and then he still had his strength, hadn't told her the truth, that the Philistines jumped him and the Philistines are upon you. But reading it this time, we're told that they were hiding in a room, which is strange. It's not modern America where we have cavernous rooms. These are tiny rooms, so it's difficult to, does she have like a hidden place, a hidden floor or something? I don't know, but it looks to me like they didn't jump out. So she tests him with the first three, and then he's able to retain his strength, and then he breaks the rope and so on, and so the Philistines stay hidden, which helps me a little bit with the plausibility of this. Bill said it's like a game, and so that makes it more like a game. If they're not actually jumping on him to subdue him, then maybe to Samson it seemed that she was playing a game with him. Hmm. Why does the lie about new ropes work when they've already tried that? Because last chapter, they bound, well, it was men of Judah that bound him with new ropes, so maybe that's the answer. I specifically remember they bound Samson with new ropes at that point, and that didn't work. So maybe Delilah maybe the men of Judah didn't transfer that information. But that had been tried once, and it didn't work. So.
Well, of course, the men that saw that of the Philistines didn't live to tell the tale. So, yeah.
And did you come across this whole idea of, is Delilah a Philistine or an Israelite? I think commentators are debating that, because apparently this name is a Semitic Hebrew name. And so I've read several commentators that were saying that she was a Hebrew woman living in Philistine territory in the Valley of Sorek, which lies between the tribe of Dan and Philistine territory. Yeah. So did you, anybody give any thoughts on that?
I didn't. I didn't really run across that. And I didn't really think to look about it, because she seems awfully chummy with the Philistines. But I don't know. Did anybody else find that? Any other comments? So one more obvious difference is, to me,
A, you have the absence of family. So
as far as differences between this account and Samson's first wife,
with his first wife, he asked his father to go get her. So, and this seems like his father has already passed away, but similarly, there's his brothers aren't present. It doesn't seem like there's nothing of that. The absence of God, as Cole mentioned earlier, chapter 14 talks about how this was of the Lord in chapter 14, but now this is definitely not of the Lord. Whatever's going on here, God is, I don't believe, approving of. And then, of course, the absence of marriage. He is not married to her. This is as close biblically, I suppose, as we see to our modern day. They were dating and shacking up, so it seems. And I guess this is what happens. maybe not exactly. We can't use this as a cautionary tale. All of these things will happen to you anyway. So as far as why the Bible might tell us about Delilah's name, I got to thinking about that. The Bible tells us the names of people that are either really good or really bad. And generally speaking, there may be more to it than that, but that's the reason I went with, at least. And as Bill pointed out, she most likely was a religious prostitute in this way. And as far as the room, that may be some explanation. She could very well be in a temple of the God there, which is why maybe the Philistine men would be there or had the space to be there. I don't know if they were just in a little, one-room house. But I don't know. That's just conjecture. Anyway, not good at all. Not good at all. Any other comments? Yeah, Levi.
Yeah, I just have to put this out there because I'm confused in the sense of just this whole narrative and kind of what's happening here. So I'll just ramble a little bit. I don't get how, we were studying in high school where, we're talking about Greek epics, that they make up, that are obviously made up by guys. And you're just like, it just sounds like it's like one of those stories. It's just like things are happening that don't really seem like something humans would do. Like, I don't know. I think Logan brought that up when we were talking about it. I'm just not sure what is happening here. I want to know if maybe somebody has a comment. Maybe there's a subtext we just are not told about. But why would Samson be playing this game with her? Like, what reason would he have to just be like, okay, well, we'll try this, we'll try that, and then... I don't know. It's just really confusing for me. Dad brought up that maybe Samson's testing her in a way. Maybe figuring out if she really is betraying him. Trying to see if, because obviously he hasn't had a wife that hasn't betrayed him, so maybe he's playing this game to figure out whether or not that is. I don't know. This whole story seems really weird to me in the sense of, I don't know, people's happening here, but.
Yeah.
Just so I can actually put something out there, Dad mentioned earlier that, and I know Bill said there was another meaning too, but I think Dad said something about Delilah's name meaning also could be meaning night, and Samson's is the sun, so that's an interesting contrast there.
I didn't know that. Conflicting people. Motive. I guess the best explanation I could ever give, and somebody here may have a better one than this, but I guess love will make you do crazy things. That seems to be the most likely thing. And I think also, and we'll see this as we get into the next question, I think Samson is inherently a trusting person. We might even, I don't know if you'd go so far as to say naive, but if... it may come down simply to he was showing off, and he felt like he could because he felt like he could trust her enough that he, or maybe at this point in his life, of course, it seems like he's already been judging Israel for quite some time. He's older. Maybe he's mellowed out as far as his personality, and he doesn't feel fear. Because the last time he had a woman betray him, he went crazy. Well, not literally, but he killed an awful lot of people. And justifiably so. But anyway, it could be that he just, all those things are off. He doesn't feel like he can be touched anymore, like he can be affected by whatever it is that she's going to throw, because he's been strong all this time. And I don't know, maybe another theory. Any other theories? Since we've entered the realm? Okay.
Hunter, if you'd like, number three, how does Delilah get Samson to divulge the source of his strength? Why does Samson tell her his secret despite knowing what she has done the past three times? And why might he say that his hair rather than God is the source of his power?
I'm not passing Dennis.
Yes.
The first one. How she gets Samson to divulge the source of strength? Well, first off, she just straight out asks him. And then she did as did his first, as did his, it's his only wife, the wife of Dimnah, puts a guilt trip on him. She says, "You have mocked me and only lies." And then, "You don't love me," that ploy. And then she's, just like his first wife, she pestered him daily. This seems to be where it all comes, the wheel come off the wagon on that, because he just can't take that until he got fed up with her and nagging, and so he told her just to get him shut up. And I believe he probably had no clue that she tried to cut his hair off. I didn't think so. She knows it, but I don't think he still feels threatened by it. Why does Samson tell her the secret despite knowing she has done it for past times? I think he would have learned from his wife about giving in to the relentless pestering, but apparently he didn't. So I really don't know why. Why might he say that his hair rather than God is the source of his power? Seems he is kind of predisposed to viewing things carnally, I think, and physically. The most immediate answer would be that his uncut hair instead of God. I'm not saying he didn't have a relationship with God. He judged Israel for 20 years, and obviously did. He's faithful. The Bible doesn't give us a lot of other information. Assume that we discount his faithful. So there's things that we don't know about God in. But just like the vengeance part of when he came to the pillars, he's talking about he must take vengeance for putting out his eyes. Maybe he had a prayer prior to that about God, and what was said there that we were, privy to. So I think he just views things carnally, and that he never learned.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I can come up with on that.
No, that's good. One other thing I wanted to add from, actually, I think it was question number two, which is the fact that another difference is that Samson's first wife was threatened with death by being burned alive, her and her household, and that was her motivation to give Samson over. And, you can't hardly blame a person for maybe falling to that. And I don't know that he ever blames, he may blame her somewhat, but he mostly blames them, the Philistines, to do it. With Delilah, all they have to do is offer some money. Now, they offer a lot of money. One of my professors recently was talking about a shekel. I don't know if this is, it says pieces of silver. I assume it's a shekel. Most think it's about relatively the size of our modern-day quarter, give or take. Anybody that has 1,100 quarters or ever had it, that's a chunk of change. And obviously, silver is more valuable than that. I don't know how much this is. We'll find out over in chapter 17 that at least 200 shekels is enough to make a carved image out of. So they offer a lot of silver. to get this job done, a price that she happily is willing to work for. Anyway, I want to point that out, but appreciate Dennis's thoughts there. Other thoughts here on Samson divulging? Yeah.
I just read, I don't know if it's right, or I didn't figure it myself, but they equated up to $90,000 in today's money. So I don't know.
Okay.
It's way off or pretty close, but it is quite a bit of money.
Yeah, I'd take that figure. Yeah. Again, that's chunky change. Now, is that with inflation? Yeah, Bill.
So verse 16 is kind of a hoot to me. It came to pass when she pestered him daily with her words and pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death. That reminded me of Proverbs chapter 21. Verse 9 reads, better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. And Proverbs 21 verse 19 says, better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. So there's a lot of power there.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is enough power, and I think we'll see this in the next question as well. By him divulging the secret, one that I don't know that he'd ever told anyone before, he forfeits not only his physical strength, but his position as judge. He forfeits everything about him that makes him special, that makes him God's servant, by doing this. So yes, it's a very powerful force. Particularly when it's someone that, obviously, it says that he loves her, he cares about her. I think he trusts her blindly, but trusts her regardless. And those are powerful tools. And emotional manipulation is has taken down many a strong man, many a strong person, not just men. But yes.
And let's not forget what's making him weak, what's taking him down. You know, you got the strongest, I didn't think of this, I've read it, the strongest man in the world made weak because of a sinful relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, 1,000 Philistines couldn't take him down, but yeah. Anything further? Levi?
Just an alternate view on that last part here. I don't read this as a statement of pride. As he says in verse 17, I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaven, then my strength will leave me, I should be going to leave. So it doesn't sound to me like he's saying it's my hair that's doing everything. Or I think he still references God just by connection of ideas. I don't know if anybody had any thoughts about that.
I kind of rethought that myself. Yeah, I think you're right. There is a reference to God, but yeah. Let's move along. This will be for Grant. Number 4, what did Delilah do to Samson to cause his strength to leave him? What did the Philistines do to him after the Lord leaves him? And why are we told that his hair began to grow back?
All right. So that first one, what did Delilah do to Samson to cause his strength to leave him? So we have this already. She pressed him daily. We really have to get to, really get him to turn really away from God. And to leave the strength that he has in God. And that is that she cut his hair off. So remove that strength, remove that tension, that connection that he had with God, that vow that he had with God. So he got, physically removed the hair from his head. Second of all, what did the Philistines do to him after the Lord leaves him? They did a lot to him. It says here they poked out his eyes, they bound him and put him in Gaza, they bound him with bronze fetters, and he became a grinder. I guess they put him into some sort of work mill where he was just grinding salt or rock or something to put him into hard labor, forcing hard labor. And he did that for a time until his hair grew back. So the third one there, why are we told that his hair began to grow back? His hair was a symbol of his strength with God, his connection with God. And so as it kind of grew back, it's kind of so that he kind of returns to God, he puts his trust back in God, his faith in God, and his strength returns.
Yeah, great. Other thoughts to add to that? Comments? Mark?
I gotta imagine when he was grinding in the mill there, that a constant taunt was,
we expected more from you, Samson. You're grinding worse than many women do. Where is your strength? And then, of course, the question that we all ask is, why didn't the Philistines assign a barber? If they had any smarts, they would have had one guy cut his hair every day.
Yeah. Well, hindsight's 20/20, I guess. No, it's true, and I love this little thing, because this tiny little detail, although it's just in the short little phrase, I think it communicates so much, and the fact that, like we've said tonight, he's a flawed individual, just like all of us are. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. He's not, he doesn't stand alone in that. He's not special, but I think he at least recognizes that, and he allows his hair to grow back and renew that relationship with God. So he's no different than Moses or David or Jacob or any of the other men of faith that are also mentioned in Hebrews 11 or anywhere else in the Bible that had flaws, that fell to sin, and then recognize it and turn back to the Lord. I think it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, I like your comments. I think you're right on. I particularly like verse 21 and your second question. What did the Philistines do to him after the Lord leaves him? Well, they put out his eyes. But look what happened next. They took him down to Gaza. We're going to show you who's in charge. They took him down to Gaza, probably paraded him around, because here's the guy that carried the gates. And we've got him now. We've got him under control. He's our prisoner now. He's nothing now. And what a power play that would be for the Philistines. I thought that was pretty cool to think about. And then that idea of his hair being cut and it's starting to grow back. Isn't that neat? Spurgeon wondered if Samson would occasionally feel his hair. You know how it is when you get, I don't get a short haircut very much, but I get back here and I can feel his short hair. And think about maybe that was him beginning to think about God. And maybe asking God to help him one last time.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't thinking about that, but he probably would have never remembered a moment in time where he didn't have long hair, where he didn't have something tickling the back of his neck. And I know what you're talking about with short haircut. For me, whenever I, you know, shave my goatee or something like that, it almost drives you crazy until it comes back, or it does me. That same type of thing. The emotional affliction that would cause him to remember every day and feel it. Yeah.
One more thing I forgot. Isn't it kind of fitting? Samson had so much trouble with the lust of the flesh. Kind of fitting that he had his eyes gouged out or burned out or however they did that, because that took care of that temptation.
That's true. I wonder if maybe that isn't what the Lord... Maybe it's a comparison. You know, he talks about, I forget now. But I think you know what I'm talking about, where it's better to have your eyes plucked out than to have one eye plucked out than both eyes whole and cast in the fires of hell. That's a stretch, but anyway. Okay, question number five. Trace,
discuss how Samson's mistake gave the Philistines reason to worship their false god, and why did the Philistines call for Samson? What did they do to him?
Okay, so his mistake gave the Philistines reason to worship their false god. Obviously, it's like Bill said, that was a huge power trip for them. Samson, with God's power, was way more powerful than all their gods, than all of them put together. And they didn't stand a chance against him when he was at his full peak, you know. So yeah, they prayed him around, and it says that for the second part of the question, why did the Philistines call for Samson? What did they do to him? It reminds me of when Jesus was being mocked before he was crucified.
Mm.
They mocked. They probably just made a show out of him,
mm-hmm.
and just put him to mockery.
Yeah.
Just like Bart said, you know, You know, you can take down 1,000 Philistines, but you can't take down one woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just so humiliating. But he uses that to fuel his fire, you know?
Yeah.
And God returns to him. But, you know, it does say that, you know, it says back there in verse 20 that the Lord had departed from him when his hair is cut. So, you know, God, he felt that, obviously. He probably felt that. And now that he's given lots of time to think about it and his hair's grown back, you know, he's back in the right place. So,
yeah.
It's really cool.
Excellent. Any other comments here on this particular question?
Yeah, real quick, I want to suggest that Delilah was a bit of a celebrity around the area.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how she was treated. And then also notice that Samson was being led about by a boy, a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have also been an insult. You know, look, we can guard you with a little boy.
Yeah, insult on injury. More.
Doesn't have to do with the question, but in verse 23, they go to straight sacrifice to Dagon. So one of the commentators talked about who Dagon was, and he was a fish god. So he was like half man and half fish. So he was kind of like a mermaid, like Christ.
Okay. Was he top half fish or bottom?
Whoever read said it could be either way.
Okay. Not really pertinent, I guess, but I do want to know someday. Anyway, I was thinking about this, as far as this mistake, it reminded me of Titus chapter 2, and how it discusses there, Paul is telling Titus what to instruct young men and young women, and he uses the language that the word of God may not be blasphemed, may not be spoken against. And that the young men may conduct themselves away so that they don't have anything evil to say of you. And there's other verses like that in Scripture. And I think this is a powerful example of what can still and does still happen to us today. Yes, sin has spiritual consequences. Those are the most dire. Those are the ones that we have to take care of. But our deeds also have far-reaching outer effects from time to time. And people watch for it, and they want Christians... Anytime you promote something, or you say that something is good, or something is right, and something else is wrong, they want to make sure that you fall. Yeah, Trace.
Well, I was just thinking, the way they mocked him, you have to think, another comparison to Christ, I think he knew he had his strength returned to him. I think he knew that, and he could have showed it. I mean, he did ask God for the strength, but I think, like Christ, he knew he had that power to do what he needed to do to be right,
mm-hmm.
but he held off.
Yeah.
He held off until the right time, and then he showed it. So.
There you go. Okay, last question for Lauren. Why did Samson pray that he could avenge his two eyes as opposed to more spiritual reasons? Why does God answer the prayer of Samson? And why is it significant that Samson's family came there, found him, and buried him in the tomb of his father?
So, the A part, why did Samson pray he could avenge his two eyes? Don't know for certain, but it seemed that, you know, Samson valued his eyes. Anybody would. But... and it may go back to Samson's tendency, as we saw in previous chapters, to kind of keep things even. You know, he made sure he paid his bet for the 30 changes of clothing. He burns the fields for the Philistines taking his wife. And then he kills a whole bunch of them for revenge against his wife. So perhaps in his mind that was significant justification take down the temple and kill the Philistines for doing wrong that way.
Mm-hmm.
B, why does God answer the prayer of Samson? Well, they're in this temple of Dagon and they're blaspheming God. And God uses him as a symbol, as his judge, to bring judgment upon the Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
C, why was it significant that Samson's family came there, found him, and buried him? Well, it's significant in one aspect that it so shocked the Philistines that these guys are able to get in there and get out with the body, with, you know, they're not able to resist them at that time. It weakened the Philistines.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shows that his tribe and his brothers, they respected Samson as a judge and as a family member, and they were willing to risk going in there and get it.
Yeah. Very good.
Other comments?
This last question here. Mark?
Yeah, appreciate those comments. You know, I've always thought that it was just 3,000 that were killed, but that's just who was on the roof, right? And all five of the Philistine lords were there, the ones that had been planning with Delilah. They had shown up, and probably Delilah was there. As Phil said, she's a celebrity, so they all died together. I love the fact that we're told his brothers and his father's household come down, because it seems that they had been somewhat separate from him, although we don't, reading between the lines a little bit, but his best man was a Philistine. So now they accept him back in, and being buried in the Old Testament is equivalent to being baptized in the new promised land. Mm-hmm. The Old Testament was Canaan, and you were buried there. And for us, it is the church. You know, we want to be a part of the church. And so he is accepted back into his household. And I just think it's a beautiful picture that we have here of, as has been said, a man who was flawed and had fallen into sin, but then spent time, as he's grinding for weeks or months, repenting of his sin, and then asking the Lord to avenge him. And of course, the scripture's full of God will avenge.
Mm-hmm.
2 Thessalonians chapter 2 talks about God avenging those who harm us. So it's a beautiful picture, and it's just an incredible way to end this book of Judges.
Yeah. I have a couple of takes. One is that he asked for vengeance on his eyes, because this is signifying him wanting or expressing to the Lord his desire to retake his spot as God's servant, as God's judge. Because before then, that has always been his message, is vengeance. I'm going to take my vengeance on the Philistines, because that was God's will. That's what he was doing. And I can't help but wonder if that's his prayer here, is just this once, let me be your instrument of judgment once more. Just like Warren said, God had a man on the inside. And give me this once. And then this phrase, as opposed to the end of chapter 15, where he prays to God for a miracle, basically. Are you going to let me thirst to death here? Because, and let everyone say that I died at the hand of the Philistines. And now he says, allow me to die with the Philistines. So he has a complete change. Not that what he said in chapter 15 was wrong, but this is a completely different mindset. He understands fully his place and what he can do, and he asks the Lord for the opportunity to die with the Philistines and die for the Lord ultimately. I think that's remarkable. If there's no other comments, let's conclude there. We're a little over time, but Samson's worth it. He gets three chapters.